In this final podcast, what I want to do is to tell the story differently in relation to encounter and share with you an anecdote which is within the article that I've been talking about, but doesn't apparently have anything to do with education. It's got a great deal to do with encounter, and I'll comment on it towards the end in relation to the link that there might be with education. Life on a farm is generally good, virtuous and healthy. It requires regular physical exercise and gives plenty of opportunity to be part of the turning of the seasons. At times, as at the end of winter, it enters into what we call a thin time, a period during which there are doubts about whether there'll be enough food, sufficient pasture to eke out until the sun and warmth return with spring. Occasionally, it can slip suddenly into a different kind of existence altogether, and a swift, sharp turn in the weather can bring on what feels like vengeance. Ruminants, cows and sheep, by definition, must have grass or some such fodder on which to ruminate, or they will die. And perhaps, surprisingly, in cold weather, dehydration is as likely a cause of death as in hotter times. So regular access to water in winter is crucial for the livestock. On this day, within a few hours of snowfall, the temperature falls sharply and the winds pick up. This is time when stock are totally dependent on what fodder can be taken to them because no vegetation is accessible. Sheep will scratch at the ground to exposed ragged grass, but this is not going to suffice. Cows need several gallons of water a day, and once taps are frozen, the only alternative is to bring water by the bucket, which must be drawn up from a pond near the field, which, in turn, is frozen over and has got snow on its banks. A gallon of water weighs just over half a stone, or 14 pounds. Pigs also depend on water to help digest their dry feed, and require another gallon or so a day. In addition, we have a sow with piglets, and as with any lactating animal, she requires more water than usual to maintain her milk. Sheep can last much longer without water, but there's a particular concern in that the frozen pond is at the far end of their field, and it's possible for a thirsty ewe to venture out onto the ice and risk drowning. Ensuring that fresh water is safely available has to involve a good enough strategy to coax them away from the steep bank. Our ewes are pregnant, and with lamb in due in a couple of weeks, the growing lamb draws huge resources from the ewe, and in the final days of pregnancy, that is a time of twin lamb disease, when in the latter stage of pregnancy, the mother loses all condition, falls to the ground, dies, and in vain, because the unborn lambs are lost too. But this story is not really about looking after livestock in bad weather, no. During this particular week, the world shows up and it is inhospitable. It fails to remain in its normal, variable and familiar state. It is neither comfortable nor in accordance with some sense of my personal control or understanding. Instead, it cuts right across how it, the world, ought to be, and then remains there in this uncomfortable, challenging version of itself, lurking outside my door. I am obliged to be there with it, despite its contradictory nature. A farmer is called to farm, even when the world is at its most hostile to the notion of farming. There is no escape from this without the likelihood of decline and death, either literally with regard to the livestock or figuratively to the role and identity of the farmer. The world calls me forth to perform my role, whether or not it conforms to how I would prefer it to be. I want to be clear that this is quite a different quality of obligation from not being interested in going to work today. No, this situation challenges who I am capable of being, or whether I can even be in relation to the world. And in this process, something will have to either live or die. So this story is about my experience of remaining obliged in my role in relation to the world in circumstances that defy my personal preference and insists on consequences. I remain thoughtful of this while in the process of doing so. I notice my reluctance. I'm aware of the reserves of energy and strength that this work costs me, the points at which my skills and capacities are insufficient, and I moderate the pace at which I undertake the necessary tasks. I'm simultaneously aware of the question, what's being asked of me in this inhospitable circumstance? And the answer is, to be who I am called and claimed to be. Now, this may sound a bit mysterious, a bit grandiose, but to put it more succinctly, it means there are times when to be a farmer is only really understood, is only properly clear to the world when it's most difficult or improbable. I find this a profound insight, one that has significant implications for the teacher and the student. Understanding the role of farmer can be very easy on a balmy, sunny day or at the point of gathering the fruit. But at those times, the stakes are not great enough to know who might be the farmer. Back to this wintry week. The heavy snow is coming at me horizontally and I shuffle down to the pond. I break a bucket-sized hole and begin the half-hour task of gathering the cow's water. I bring it and wait beside them as they take turns drinking bucket after bucket after bucket. The howling wind dies and we find ourselves together, the cows and I, in a calmness. The evening light is still sharp enough and it catches the glint of the snow on their thick chestnut red coats. They munch down on some fresh fodder I've brought and we are held by this place. I look up, and from the hedgerow a pale barn owl takes flight and glides towards us, around and just above us. This ancient bird gazes down, then circles and departs, and we are left, the cows and I, still gathered, silent in the falling snow. You see, I never get as close to the cows as I do when it's as hard as this. There's a peculiar sense of harvest that comes from being in the world when it's like it has been this week. I've rediscovered a resilience in myself and kindled a trust again between me and the animals and the land too. I have, more importantly, re-experienced what it is to call myself a farmer, to inhabit the role when so much is at stake. This is not the first time it's happened, but I'm struck by how forgetful I've been of previous experiences. It seems like it has to be born again. Like many in this cold week, in this winter, I've entreated the gods to stop the storm, to bring the thaw and make way for the spring. And sure enough, as the week ends, the temperature gains, and now it rains, and we return to the familiar. I feel the exhaustion of the past week. The animals return to their wary independence, and there is relief. But I do not feel quite as alive as I did when the world was not mine to be so easily had. Perhaps as you listen to that, you're already making your own links to what it is to be a teacher, and that we may want to claim that role to be a teacher, but at times we doubt if we can. It seems like the world isn't showing up quite how I need or want it to be, and yet I'm called to teach anyway. And maybe you can think of those times those episodes when time stands still and we find ourselves in the most inhospitable situation, and yet something breaks through nevertheless. And that we find ourselves not just being who we are called to be, but in relationship with the student who's doing something and experiencing something similar to us. Now, there's mystery in that. There's encounter in that. And it's one of those moments, as I say, when time stands still. But it's also the time when we might find ourselves closest to our vocation and also to the students that we serve too. I don't want to explain that anecdote any further, but just to let it exist in your own mind, and that you might have the freedom to choose how that works its way with you or not, as a way of bringing this series of podcasts about teaching as creative subversion. Thank you.